Thank you. Yeah, it's wonderful to be back at Unity in Chesapeake. Thank you. It's good to have someone looking out for those things. Thank you, Madeline. So yes, I just checked on our calendar. I was wondering when the last time we were here, I realized we started coming here to Unity in Chesapeake back in 1991, and then again in 95, and again in 2000, 2005, 2007, and 2008 was the last time we were here. So it's been too long. It's been 8 years. And it's great to be back and to feel the beautiful spiritual energy that this community is connecting and radiating and building. And I think, this whole movement, you know, Madeline and I think in many ways are very fortunate because we're able to travel and see the Unity movement throughout the United States, Canada. We've been to Unity churches in Australia, in the Caribbean, in Europe. And this movement is, from my point of view, one of the healthiest movements in the sense that it's really devoted to connecting, I think, at a deep level with what Jesus was pointing at, in a deep level, not just merely the dogma around his teaching, but his example of as being a healer and his example of this radical inclusiveness of having love for everyone, for all living beings. And I think there's this underlying sense, if you ever go to Unity Village, which I highly recommend, it's kind of like going to Mecca, if you can, once in your life, get to Unity Village and see the, and you get a feeling for the spirit of the land and see the prayer tower and get a sense of the vision of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore to create a center of healing based not so much on trying to fix people and fix the sort of the outer appearance in the world, but really starting from a healthy understanding that all healing begins here. Like Gandhi said, you know, he said very clearly, there can never be any positive social change without positive personal change. And he also said we must be the change that we would like to see in the world. And this basic idea that it really starts within, with us. And from that foundation, which is really the only one we can actually change is ourselves, we can create a field around us that can bless others and to help bring a deep change into our society. And I think we all know in our bones that this is essential today. So one of the things that I've been focusing on for many years is intuition and the ability that we have as human beings to connect with a knowing that's trans-rational or beyond or transverbal in a sense that something beyond merely figuring things out on the level of the programmed mind. And one of the things I've discovered over the years is that this is an ancient wisdom tradition that goes back in virtually in every society that we understand that intuition is a capacity that all human beings have. It's not something only for a fortunate few and everybody else we have to, you know, try to figure our way through life. Actually, we all have this capacity for intuition. It's just been blocked in many ways, but we can remove the blockages. It's kind of like this story I heard back when President Reagan was in office, and he talked about how the story was that, you know, he had this idea that we could solve the energy crisis once and for all by building a pipeline. So he went to his advisors and he said, I've got this great idea. We'll build a pipeline from the earth up to the sun, you know, big pipeline. And we'll be able to just, you know, channel that energy in. We'll be able to meter it. We'll get rich. There'll be plenty of energy. We'll solve this whole problem once and for all. And so his advisors came back a few days later and they said, well, we've conferred about your idea, Mr. President, but there's one problem that we just don't think we can overcome. And that is that as we build this pipe and we get higher and higher and we start getting up in the region of the sun, the temperatures up there are so hot that whatever we build the pipe out of, it's gonna melt it. There's no material that can withstand that kind of heat. And he said, that's why I'm president. I already thought of that. When we're building the pipeline and we get up close to the sun, then we'll just only work at night. So we laugh, I won't say anything about former presidents, but no, we laugh because we know that from our point of view, right, this, you know, the sun is always shining. It's the same thing with our intuition. Our intuition is always shining. It's just we very often are turned in the other direction and we're paying attention to the stories in our mind about what we should have done or what they should have done or the wounds that we have and so forth. Or we go outside and we say, well, it's a cloudy day, the sun's not shining today. The sun is always shining. The clouds of our programming in many ways are what are blocking the intuition. So the idea basically is to understand that if we cultivate an inner practice, and I love that about this, the Unity Movement, is that this is foundational. The idea of a practice, that we're not just theorizing about these ideas, we're going to practice. If we want to be good at something, right, we need to practice. And the practice has a number of different dimensions. This afternoon we'll talk about quite a few of these different dimensions, but essentially one of the foundational dimensions is the practice of cultivating an inner attitude of receptivity. And in the Christian tradition, of course, we talk about going into the closet to pray and blocking out external distractions, so that we can deepen our connection with the inner silence out of which we can connect with our intuition, with a deeper knowing. And the idea that intuition is feminine in the sense that it's a, even though what we all are essentially is consciousness that's eternal, we have a masculine and feminine capacity. The feminine is actually this capacity we have to be receptive. And if we're not receptive to a higher knowing, that's really our own true nature, to guide us in our life, what are we relying on to guide us in our life? Instead of that, we have to really think about that, you know, because all of us are little sponges, and when we're born, whatever culture we're born into, their attitudes become my attitudes, their food becomes my food, their way of living becomes my way of living. And so we're very much products of our society. And if we just go along being products of our society, I think we can understand, we have to understand this, that we are born into a society that has a lot of fundamental attitudes that are not in our best interest. They're not helpful. They are devastating, not only the internal landscape of our own consciousness in many ways, but also the external landscape of our planet and animals, and future generations will not have an earth that's healthy if we just continue with these assumptions. So it's not enough to just be carbon copies of a program and just fulfilling that. And the only way we can, as Gandhi said, be a force for the transformation of our society is to change ourselves, which means connecting with our intuition. So instead of being guided by the voices inside of us from our parents, from our teachers, from our ministers, not Reverend Paula, but other ministers, you know, all these voices that have come through, and, you know, and to connect, as Charles Fillmore said, you know, he said, we have to go straight to headquarters, right? He didn't mean going to Myrtle. He meant, you know, straight to headquarters. And so this is the idea. We connect with our own inner guidance system. And this is what intuition is. And I think we all know in our bones that there's no greater gift, there's no greater ally we can ever have than an inner knowing that we can learn to connect with, that will guide us to live our life. And it doesn't mean our life suddenly becomes totally easy and we have nothing to do because everything is, but it does mean we'll still have challenges. But what it does mean is we're living our life. We're living our life authentically. It's the life that we're here for. We're fulfilling our purpose on some level. And when that happens, I think we begin to connect with the bubbling spring of joy that is our true nature, that underneath, we work very hard, I think, and I think we can see this. You know, my old Zen teacher used to talk about how if we sit quietly, we realize very quickly, he called it the popcorn popping machine that we can't turn off. We can't find the off switch, right? We're just always thinking about what I should have done, or what I shouldn't have done, or what they should have done, or what I hope they don't do, or what I wish they wouldn't have done, or what I'm going to have for lunch. And you know, so our mind is doing this all the time. And so the idea is to realize that when we quiet our mind, we can actually, through practice, connect with an inner silence and receptivity that will allow us to connect with our own true nature. And when that happens, that glimpse, in many ways, is an intuitive glimpse, and we realize that what we are is not a thing. We're not an object that was born and will die, and therefore we have to get what we want and keep away what we don't want and be locked in a struggle our entire life with other people who are under the same delusion of being this object, a fundamentally separate self, and they gotta get what they want, keep away what they don't want. That is competition and suffering. And so the whole idea is to realize that what we are is the light that makes this whole thing possible. Our consciousness is the sky. It's infinite and vast and eternal, and the clouds don't in any way stain the sky. The sky can let them come and go. And in many ways, we are the same. That's our true nature. And so if we can understand this, we can begin to be the space within which beautiful things can evolve and open and develop, and we can tend the garden of our lives and let the beautiful things come up. And we'll be able to be a space of healing, right? Because we don't see others as objects, we see the being that is perfect always, like we see ourselves the same way. We understand that we've gone through, all of us have been wounded in this society. No one has escaped pretty severe wounding. So when we come together and understand that and have compassion for each other and do the best we can to heal the wounds in ourselves, then we can bless others as well. And that really in many ways means connecting with an inner wisdom, because very often the very compassionate monkey up in the tree looks down and he sees this poor fish and brings him up to the safety of the tree. We have to realize that we may not know the best for other people. We may think that we do, but the best thing we can do is really to work on our own awareness and to question, like I say, the official stories in our society. So I'm going to quickly check and see how I'm doing. I think I'm just about, I have a couple more minutes. I'll just say a couple of words just briefly about my own journey, because I think it's kind of interesting, just very briefly. I was born and raised actually in the town of Concord, Massachusetts, where there was these revolutions, right? I remember every 1775. So there was this Revolutionary War began, and my father actually every April 19th, which is Patriots Day, would get on his Minuteman outfit and get the gun off the wall. You know, we'd go down to the Old North Bridge in Concord and reenact the battle and send the Redcoats back to Boston and celebrate the revolution. You know, and then about 80 years later, there was the Transcendentalist movement, which is kind of a revolution too, where Emerson and Thoreau and Alcott and Walden Pond and this whole idea. And many of these ideas actually that came in through the Concord philosophers became a really an important part of our society. The idea of God, for example, as infinite principle from the Taoist tradition, or the idea of God as infinite mind from the Buddhist tradition, or the idea of God as equally male and female, this divine feminine from the Hindu tradition very much. And these ideas came in, and they were like, you know, seeds that started sprouting. And unity, in a sense, is part of that flowering of this human heritage that we have of incredibly enlightened and awakened beings who understood at a deeper level that there is an underlying force and understanding how we can live in harmony with that. And I remember going away to college and just, it was during the Vietnam War era, and I was, you know, protesting and all these different things were happening. But I remember started realizing that, there's this wisdom tradition that had been kind of hidden. And as I started to explore that, I read one book that kind of encapsulated it very well. It's a book called Cosmic Consciousness by Richard Buck. He wrote it back in the 1890s. And he basically said most people attain what he calls self-consciousness, which is caring about myself and trying to get what I want, kind of that where we mostly all of us are. But certain people had attained what he called cosmic consciousness, which is essentially a qualitative leap beyond that, where we realize that we're not fundamentally separate. And there's this loss of the fear of death and a sense of being here to bless the world. And the great founders of religions, sages, saints, mystics, poets, and so forth, both men and women, Richard Buck talked about these examples of cosmic consciousness. So I was very inspired by this, and I remember thinking, okay, you know what, I don't want to waste my time anymore with all this stuff. I want to go for cosmic consciousness. And I went back home and I told my father, Dad, you know, have you heard about cosmic consciousness? That's why we're here. We're supposed to be here. You know, what are you wasting your time with all this thing, you know, money and this and that? We should be attaining cosmic consciousness. And he said, you know, son, I've spent a lot of money on my education, on your education. And he actually had a whole chain of newspapers outside Boston that I was basically the oldest son and was going to take it over. But to my delight, my brother had this equal interest, actually, when I talked to him about these ideas. So we put our heads together to decide what we should do to attain cosmic consciousness. It was hard to figure it out because, you know, it's easy to talk about it, but what do you actually do? And we finally came up with an answer, which was to go to California. We knew that You know, if we could get to California, 1975, you know, there for sure was a lot of cosmic consciousness, plenty for everybody. You know, so we headed out there. I remember walking down the driveway. I told my father we're going to do this. He blessed his heart. He said, every man must march to the beat of the drum that he hears. He even quoted Thoreau. So anyway, we walked down the driveway, had some fresh baked cookies from my mother, and really, it was an amazing experience because I found that if you just, for me anyway, just letting go and trusting the universe, we didn't have anything. I mean, the little bit that we had, we got rid of it, because if you have to carry it, pretty soon, I don't think I need that extra pair of shoes anymore or that extra pair of pants anymore, and things, we got lighter and lighter, and we got as far as Buffalo after about a month, and we thought, well, got a long way to go here. And then we decided, since it was getting really freezing cold, we headed south. So we actually walked down through upstate New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky. We ended up walking to Tennessee, and in Tennessee we ended up for a while at a place called The Farm, which was the largest hippie commune in the world back at that point, and there was about 900 people, and they were all from California. So we said, thank you everybody for meeting us halfway. You won't have to walk all the way there, you know. It's made it a lot easier, you know. And it was a beautiful community, really. I was very inspired by that. And we ended up eventually walking all the way to Alabama, and you don't believe me, but there was actually a Zen center in Alabama, in Huntsville. And so that led to other meditation centers in Atlanta and then San Francisco, and eventually became a monk in Korea. And when I came back, I got my PhD at Berkeley and Todd College, and then eventually met Madeline in Switzerland. And we really realized that one of the most wonderful things to do to actually be able to serve the consciousness on this planet is to go to Unity Churches, because this movement, as I said earlier, is a movement I feel so deeply connected to, because there's this authentic foundation of self-inquiry, to really work on ourselves. And then out of that, to help create a community that brings the teaching and lives the teachings and embodies the teachings in the world. But the thing I remember very clearly was how, while walking on this walk, and really having no reason to feel this way, all of a sudden I would have these waves of joy just washing over me, you know. And we had no reason to have that. I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. I wasn't following the cultural program. I had no security, no money. We gave away everything, really, and yet I found this just great happiness. And I think that's a little clue, that has been a clue to me, that if we can connect with our intuition and live our life, no matter what other people think, it doesn't mean we don't have challenges, like I said, but we do have this sense of joy. And I want to thank all of you, because I know that if you found your way here to this room, you're on a similar journey, a path of questioning the official stories in our society, connecting with your intuition, and then creating a community that supports that. The Buddhist teaching, you know, there's a teaching of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Buddha is the enlightened, the three jewels. The Buddha is the enlightened true nature. The Dharma is the path or the teachings that help us to realize that. And the Sangha is the community of people who are called to awaken the truth that we are, who are interested in the Dharma and who are interested in awakening their true nature. And the Buddha, right before he died, he said, remember, without the Sangha, the community, there will never be any Buddha or Dharma. That this is really our job in many ways, is to help in our generation to embody this teaching, to understand it, and to create a vehicle to bring it forth for future generations. Every generation is called to create this and to pass this on, and we live in critical times. I think more than ever, we know that it's time for a new story, that the old story is over. And the new story, it's really up to us to create that. I love you all. Thank you so much for the efforts you're making. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much. Bless you.